WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Bob Hope turns 100 today. His official career in show business spanned 75 years. He did everything from vaudeville to Broadway, from radio to television. He also made more than 50 films. 17 of them have recently been reissued on DVD, including four road movies co-starring Bing Crosby and Dorothy L'Amour. Our film critic John Powers has been home watching movies and has these thoughts on the hugely influential film career of Bob Hope.
I still remember the first Bob Hope movie I ever saw. I must have been 7 or 8, and my family was living in the small town of Martinsdale, Iowa. My mom yelled for me to come into the living room. "You've got to see this," she said, pointing at the TV screen where Bob Hope and Bing Crosby were sitting on the sand, jawing back and forth in a way that I didn't find especially funny. But then somehow a camel showed up and spit right in Hope's eye, an animal ad-lib so utterly unexpected that Hope lurched back in shock, while Crosby hooted with laughter. My mother and I hooted too, and I was hooked. I sat and watched the rest of the movie, The Road to Morocco, startled to discover just how much funnier Bob Hope was in the movies than on those TV specials that my parents liked so much. Over the years, I saw a lot more of Hope's movies, maybe 50 or so, and though a lot of them were pretty darn bad, especially the ones from the 1960s, that was almost beside the point, which was to watch Bob Hope. For he wasn't just a terrific screen actor who knew how to deliver a wisecrack in every possible key signature. With his ski nose, jeering smile, and aggressive chin, he sometimes seemed to act with his jaw. Hope forged one of the most enduring personas in modern movies. He was the jumpy braggart, the wisecracking coward, the would-be ladies' man who's forever eyeballing women who seem hopelessly out of his league. When he wasn't losing Dorothy L'Amour to Crosby, he was sleeping with horses in his westerns, or nearly getting raped by a gorilla in The Road to Bali. For many people, his most beloved films are the 6 road pictures he made with Crosby, whose vaguely posh, often comatose-seeming calm made him the perfect foil to the wired, less educated Hope. Anyone seeing these movies for the first time today might well be surprised that they were so popular, for they seem so lazy and protracted, a bit like those Saturday Night Live skits that get turned into a movie. But for an earlier generation, these movies had a different aura. When Hope and Crosby set off on the road to Singapore or Bali or Hong Kong or Rio, they were about as hip as Hollywood got in those more innocent days. For the road pictures were a double spoof. They not only sent up formulaic adventure stories that other Hollywood movies were presenting seriously, they made fun of how these movies were made. Even as most movies worked hard to make their backlots seem like a foreign country, so Casablanca was supposed to take place in the real Morocco, the road pictures always jokingly announced they were being shot on a back lot, and that viewers were, of course, sitting in a movie theater. "He's going to sing, folks," Hope announces before one of Crosby's numbers. "Now's the time to go get your popcorn." Occasionally, this got to be too much, and watching the movies again recently, I was struck by how many tired Hollywood in-jokes show up in these road pictures. But the chemistry between Hope and Crosby was always so strong that it carried him past this, giving their work together an exuberance that often led them to song. Here, they're sitting atop that spitting camel as it carries them across an endless expanse of sand in the Sahara.
"You think we got enough gas?"
"I got a carburetor cut down to nothing. Where do you suppose we are?"
"This must be the place where they empty all the old hourglasses.
I think this is what's left after I clean my spinach. Hey, look.
They could have thought of another way to get us here."
"Here we go again, Junior.
We're off on the road to Morocco. This taxi is tough on the spine.
Beats the bus, huh, Junior?"
"Oh, beats me.
Where we're going,
why we're going, how can we be sure?
I'll lay you 8 to 5 that we meet Dorothy L'Amour. Off on the road to Morocco. Hang on till the end of the line. I hear this country's where they do the dance of the 7 veils. We tell you more, but we would have the censor on our tails. We certainly do get around. Like Webster's Dictionary, we're Morocco bound.
Of course, Hope made scores of movies without Bing Crosby. And it's amazing how many of them have the same structure. Wisecracking Bob plays a small-timer who gets in some sort of trouble. In The Pale Face, he's painless Peter Potter, a frontier dentist who marries Jane Russell, unaware that she's really Calamity Jane. In the noir spoof My Favorite Brunette, he's a photographer who gets mixed up with gangsters. In My Favorite Blonde, he's a music hall performer with a trained penguin who gets involved with Nazi spies. And in Ghostbreakers, perhaps a precursor of Ghostbusters, he plays a radio personality who gets hooked up with apparently supernatural beings. His character there is named Lawrence L. Lawrence, whose middle initial also stands for Lawrence. My parents, Hope says, lacked imagination. Through all these pictures, Hope was essentially the same. He talked big and acted small, often got the girl you'd think he'd never could get, and he did it all while delivering the endless quips that his huge team of writers always stuffed into his movies. I don't say this dismissively, for Hope's comic formula has been copied by everyone from Woody Allen to Bill Murray. Allen, in particular, has long celebrated Hope's movie acting and freely admits that his own screen persona bears strong affinities to Hope's. Woody is just the updated, neurotic, intellectual version. There was nothing remotely neurotic about Hope's own screen image, whose most striking feature may be its almost total lack of any kind of interiority. Where Allen is filled with angst, Groucho bursting with libidinous anarchy, or W.C. Fields shot through with melancholic misanthropy, Hope always stays on the surface. With Chaplin or Keaton, you saw through to the comic's very soul. This never happens with Hope, who is always content to stay within the safe limits of the gag, the crack, the one-liner. His films were never really about anything. Of all our screen comedians, Hope is the glibbest, and potentially one of the most sinister. Although he always hit it, you can see all manner of meanness glinting through those aggressive wisecracks. And had he lived in a different age, Hope would have made a great antagonist for 007. Thanks for the memory, Mr. Bond. I've long thought I would have loved to have seen him cast as Noah Cross, John Huston's role in Chinatown, which wouldn't really have been much of a stretch. Although Huston had that rumbling voice and Billy Goat gruff appearance, he was never in showbiz for the money. Hope always was. Indeed, he became one of the richest men in Southern California by investing in San Fernando Valley real estate, the very theme of Chinatown. But to imagine him playing such a dark role is to imagine a different Bob Hope. I grew up watching him make jokes about never getting the Oscar, but the truth was he never really tried. He never wanted to risk his persona by moving too far from what made him successful. And who can blame him? For Hope was really great at what he did. He knew his way around a wisecrack. Nobody ever timed a gag better. He knew how to dance, and in a movie like The Road to Rio, you see him cut loose with genuine brio. And like Fred Astaire, another Hollywood star with a seemingly unpromising voice, he knew how to put across a song, like the Oscar-winning tune Buttons and Bows, which he sang to Jane Russell in The Pale Face. In all these things, Bob Hope was satisfied to be a consummate professional. And in days when too many comedians think of themselves as artists or geniuses, such respect for his craft is no small thing.
John Powers is film critic and media columnist for LA Weekly.